and welcome to Minor Recs. My name is Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Tony and Joel, and we're here to talk about Kindred today. Kindred is originally a novel from Octavia E. Butler. It was published in June 1979, and there was a recent graphic novel adaptation just a couple years ago that won an Eisner. We're going to talk about both a little bit. The story's the same, but we'll talk about the book, we'll talk about the graphic novel, and see how they compare. The overall plot to Kindred is it's about a woman, a black woman who lives in L.A. in 1976, and she travels back in time to Maryland in 1815, often to a plantation. And so it's her experience of slavery firsthand that the story kind of centers around. Like, she meets slaves, she interacts with slaves and slave owners, and she sees the treatment and the attitudes and the language surrounding slavery. And so it's technically a sci-fi novel because there is time travel, but we'll get into that too a little bit, whether or not it's actually sci-fi. Guys, what do you think of Kindred?
The word that pops in my mind when I consider Kindred is visceral.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very intense, immediate view of the systemic persecution that existed in our country. And we read about it in books and we can know about it, but it's a much different thing to feel about it. Mm-hmm. And Octavia E. Butler does, a fantastic job of putting you in the immediate situations and life circumstances that this would present itself in, and just the outlook that these people had, and the what we would consider hopelessness given where we come from, and going back to the past. There's constant references that the main character, when she kept jumping back and forth, she could at least have a way out.
Sure.
And these people did not have a way out.
Yeah.
And it was just a grind and a crush.
Mm-hmm.
These words are popping into my head when I'm reading this book. But systemic, it's just everywhere, all over the place. What are you thinking? Why did you even consider that it would be any other way? And also, if you don't like science fiction, read this anyway. Because I wouldn't say it's the defining feature. It is a defining feature of the plot, but I encourage people to read about it because it raises so many questions. That's just my impression of it.
I think those are some good words to describe the story in both mediums as well. I think the graphic novel and the novel both hit with just this immediate sense of whatever, be it violence or be it attitudes or words or instincts that characters had, were just, you know, people didn't hesitate. People acted a certain way in the story, as real people do, as real people when they interact with other people or interact with someone they view as property, how they might react was a shock to the character, and I'm sure as intended a shock to the reader as well.
Mm-hmm. When I began reading this, I started it as an ebook. Really, this book kind of had me right from the prologue, right from the start, where it's a kind of a flash forward. I think the violence is striking, but I think it's also, it almost peaks because in that flash forward, you get a sense of some real impact and you know that there's some kind of story behind it. And I think that the way violence and really the emotional trauma impacts all of the characters, really, like, I think that this is one of the big themes of this book, is that it's constantly showing you that it doesn't go away and
right.
It lasts. And this book felt, I didn't know it was written in the 70s, so it felt really immediate to me.
It does.
And it felt like I had to keep reading right now.
Yeah.
And that's also to say that it's incredibly well constructed. It just has the writing that, like, each of the chapters is its own whole picture that also stems out and includes really interesting plots that, you know, even halfway through the book are things that are going to lead you right to the end. So
it's a 40-year-old book, but it doesn't feel dated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It feels current and immediate and timeless.
Mm-hmm. And it still has nuance.
Yeah.
And that's impressive after 40 years.
Yeah.
To razor sharp nuance to it and to understand immediately what's going on.
Yeah. And it's interesting about the nuance is the relationship with Dana, the black protagonist, and Rufus, who is one of the main characters, who is the son of the main slaveholder, the owner of that plantation. And the first time when Dana meets him, he's a young boy. But because time, as she shifts back and forth between Maryland in 1815 and LA now, the time moves differently. So Rufus, the boy back in 1815, will age a lot, but she will only age, you know, a few minutes when she, like, the time in LA only moves forward a little bit. So they're aging at different speeds. So she gets to see Rufus coming from a young boy into becoming, you know, a man. Octavia Butler shows how Dana tries to influence him, that she believes that, oh, maybe I can kind of change him a little bit, that if he's close to me, that I can kind of help who he becomes in the future, and how those expectations and those hopes and how they're kind of thwarted and frustrated over time is really interesting. It's not like this, I mean, to use the phrase, like black and white, like dynamic between the two of them, where she does grow to have some feelings for him, to care for him, even as she sees the trauma he's inflicting on the other people. Mm-hmm. I thought was really well done.
Yeah, I mean, it even goes so far as to bring back the image of her coming from the future, knowing like, oh, this boy's heart has stopped, mm-hmm. and then, you know, breathing him back to life with resuscitation. And that image comes back with Tom Whalen, which is like just completely hateable character. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The father.
The father, yeah. Yet it comes back again, and it's almost this thing where it's impossible to not see her like progression of like, well, no, I have to see empathy here because I have to believe that like there's some good. And again, it's continually thwarted, like Jamie said.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. The theme of hope is strong in the story, whether it's hope or hopelessness, depending mm-hmm. on the character, depending on the time. I'm always interested in the fact that the main character, Dana, when she goes back to the present, to 1976, is trying to prepare for her trips back, pack a bag, mm-hmm. Prepare free papers for her, or learn more about society, or the, you know, she's got this edge where she can look back at the past. But then when she goes back to the past, like, those people do not have an edge. Like, the people that are slaves, and there's the hopelessness there. She has hope that she can, oh, maybe I can make things better for myself. But there's a lot of people who can't make things better for themselves. And so it's a striking comparison between characters on just agency, how, mm-hmm. how much effect you have on your life and on your place and what you can do to help yourself, what you can do to help others. She's trying to help herself and she's trying to help others as well. Some people are trying to do neither. Some mm-hmm. people are trying to do one or the other. So there's a lot of just what you can do for yourself and what you can do for others is totally different in between the two centuries.
Mm-hmm. One thing that was brought up that I thought was interesting was in an interview, she was saying that she wrote this book specifically in response to a young male black activist that she came in contact with who was upset at older generations of African Americans. And he was saying, like, they're so subservient and passive, you know, why aren't they doing more? And just his frustration towards that. And she disagreed with him, and she wrote this book to give a historical context to the life that they were living, mm-hmm. And to show that resistance wasn't always loud, it wasn't always like in the streets, and given their situation and the small framework of agency that they were given, the type of resistance that these slaves did put forth, you know, given their options, which were very few. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the graphic novel specifically. It is an Eisner Award winner from some local Illinois people. Damian Duffy is the writer. He teaches at U of I down in Champaign. And John Jennings is the artist, who I think went to school at U of I. The graphic novel I found a little hot and a little cold in places. Mm. I did not like the art. I thought it was very flat. I thought some of the expressions mm-hmm. were weirdly grotesque and not easily read. Like, I'd see Rufus's face just in the odd panel just look bizarre and mm-hmm. demon-esque. And I'm like, is he happy? Is he mad? Is he sad? I don't know what's going on here, but it's a weird face he's making. So I don't think a lot of the art struck me. I also like thought the prologue was poorly written, but then like it really started to hit its stride about halfway through. And I feel like it got a lot better. You know, there's like an internal monologue going on that's mm-hmm. set aside in panels because she can't always speak and she can't always speak her mind. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was very effective for a graphic novel to show like what she says and what she thinks she should say or what she wishes she could say for herself or to other characters. So it's a great medium. Graphic novel is a great medium for that, that dichotomy of the way she thinks inside and the way she's acting outside had to be very different. And how do you display that? Well, you can display it very well in a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt similarly. I read about the first half of the graphic novel after I read the actual novel. And I had similar feelings to you where I had difficulty getting into the art. And I felt like the movement was kind of portrayed strangely, where in some panels it seemed very static, like the character would be drawn with her arm out, so it shows like they're supposed to be running, but the way that it's drawn seems like a statue holding its arm out in a strange way.
Yeah.
I liked how the writing was adapted, but sometimes I felt like the art would be a little too early, where I felt like that action should be happening in the panel after for us to understand it, or that maybe there was pacing issues where you would find out something shocking, and then there would be another panel of reaction right away without seeing like a pause, like a panel in between for that break that you have in the book, but not necessarily in the graphic novel. And I think often in graphic novels, we see a panel of silence here and there where you see like physical reaction or some other type of emotional reaction. And I feel like I needed more breathers in certain places where I felt like the art was paced strangely.
I read that the writer was very into the pacing because he wanted the book to go quickly because he wanted the graphic novel to be, you could read it in one sitting. It's a little long. It's almost 300 pages, which is not the longest graphic novel, but you can do it in a couple hours on a Saturday, right? And that was his number one goal. And I think he achieved that, but maybe at the expense of these other things where it's like, well, we've got to keep the page number down. I can't, we can't have these spare panels.
Extra panels.
So, on the one hand, he totally succeeded at his goal, I think. It moves. Like, I read it just as fast as I could when I sat down and actually began it. But, yeah, it's a little too much happens too fast for me. I don't know. Maybe he's overtuned by 5% is the way I would describe it. It's not just one sitting. It's slightly faster than one sitting. And that was a little too much for me.
Yeah, I was going to comment on the one of the positive things I think they did that you can't really do in just prose is that the graphic novel, anytime you're in the present day of the 70s, it's almost like a dreamlight sepia tone.
Yeah.
And that is just like an interesting stylistic choice that gives kind of the reader awareness that we're almost looking at the past by reading this book, but then we're also looking at the past inside the past. Of course, the colors are actually extremely vivid in the actual narrative from 1815 and forward. And I just think I think that when you're reading the book, you get some of that too. You get some of that feeling like you're leafing through pages of like someone carefully put together this historical report for you to read, you know.
So.
That's really interesting because in a lot of other graphic novels, when they do a flashback, the flashback is the part that is in muted tones.
Right.
But here it's setting up like the forward time is the time that's kind of out of time, is the more imaginary time, and the real time is the time of slavery.
At least from her perspective, I suppose, at this time in her life, that the traveling back in time is more real for her than being in the present.
It's like The Wizard of Oz.
That's a good point. The real world was in black and white.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe that's part of the reference there, part of the homage. I think the character work was fantastic. These characters either stuck out and meant something or didn't. And it was like there wasn't a lot of confusion. Like I knew what Dana was all about. I got what Rufus was all about as he aged, which may have changed. He certainly had a lot of, I kind of feel like it's a different Rufus every time she goes back in time, not just in age and in, you know, how he was illustrated as an older man in the graphic novel or described in the book, but like he had a different set of needs almost every time. Like sometimes, you know, he's got a need for power, and other times he's got a need for affection, and other times he's got a need for validation or escapism or vengeance, because he's a very angry young man in a lot of ways and for a lot of reasons. And I thought that was fascinating. And Dana kind of seems to be his guardian angel, which like a reluctant role as a guardian angel. So, like, I'm clearly here to help this boy. I'm not sure how, but I'm going to do my best. And so she does it, you know, both physically, whether it's saving his life or kind of mentally by either giving him what he needs or not giving him what he needs and telling him, no, this is, you're wrong. You have to do it this way or that way. Or,
and there's, right there is the study of why Rufus is acting the way he does. It's almost a nurture in nature Mm-hmm. Is it because of the times, mm-hmm. or is it because of the person? Really, that carries through the whole book of why is he acting this way. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really a very interesting aspect of that book.
Which is great. Sci-fi, right? Time travel, like, was Rufus always this way? Is he only this way now because Dana was there, or was Dana always there? Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of wonder about, what if Dana had never gone back? Yeah. Like, what would his life have been like? What would her life have been like had she not go back in a couple of different ways? Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
What if Kevin, mm-hmm. her husband, made a different decision that caused mm-hmm. her to, I don't know, if he didn't come back or did come back in one of the times, and that affected the whole continuum as well. You're right.
Yeah, which is what I love about sci-fi. I'm a big sci-fi reader, and books that do that, that pose more questions than they answer in a curious way, mm-hmm. not a frustrating way. You know, sometimes books, you know, pose questions and they don't answer them and you're left frustrated. This book, you could, you know, sit on your couch and put down after you're done reading and think about for another hour, like, oh, what if the story had gone this way, or what if this character had done that? And I find that to be the great thrill of reading this story.
And it did answer a few questions you would have. Mm-hmm. And one trip back, you mentioned that she prepared herself. She also brought back medicine. Mm-hmm. I mean, she brought back aspirin back. And there was a lot of need for it. Mm-hmm. And but she also brought back a history of slavery.
Yeah.
And that caused to be problematic mm-hmm. afterwards, because then it turned into, it's not a good idea. As we learned in Back to the Future 2, don't bring books from the future back into the past.
Yeah.
And that time travel aspect is also interesting, because she finds out that Rufus is one of her ancestors. Mm-hmm. And so one of her goals during a secondary goal, I would say, is trying to ensure that her ancestry line actually continues. That,
yeah, oh, absolutely. That primary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I thought that was interesting as well. Because,
like, I don't got to like this guy, but I do got to save
his
life.
Exactly. Yeah. So that I will exist in the future.
Nothing will vest your interest more when you time travel than to realize someone's your ancestor.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting, because even though they did bring up things like that, there's not a huge amount of space given to the actual mechanics. I mean, it's not really a focus at all as to why, I guess, scientifically or in this world this is happening. We kind of just accept that it is, that she gets dizzy, and whenever Rufus needs her, if his life is in danger, she'll go back. And when she's afraid that her life is in danger, she'll go back to her own life. But beyond that, there's not really mm-hmm. that much time devoted to it.
So I've seen people speculate as to maybe it should be more fantasy mm-hmm. fiction, but which it would still go into going into our library, go into our science fiction department, because
on the same show
we have fantasy and science fiction in the not named fantasy, but named science fiction section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually had a discussion. I had a discussion with my supervisor about, does this belong here or there? And we disagreed. Fortunately, I prevailed, because it's also the author's body of work. Mm-hmm. Where does it belong in total? And we decided it belongs in sci-fi. So I'm delighted to see the blue sticker on the spine of my brand new copies of Kindred.
Science fantasy? Can we do that?
Yeah. In most of their libraries, are they categorized?
Yes, in science fiction.
In science fiction, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's the impression I had before I picked up the book, that Octavia Butler equals science fiction.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel that is absolutely true.
Even though this one's the most maybe crossover.
Exactly.
Genre
this is like the least science fictiony mm-hmm. book, but you know, we don't want to split authors into two different shelves. So we're grouping them together here at Displanes into a science fiction.
Can I mention the fact that in the first 30, 40 pages, you don't know that the main character is African American? Is that something that someone picked up on, or no?
No, I didn't pick up on that at all.
Yeah.
So, because in the graphic novel, that doesn't come across.
Boom.
Obviously.
Right.
It's when you start meeting like Kevin, right? That like their relationship. People start talking about how they're the strangest couple that they've seen and things like that in present day.
Although readers nowadays, you know, all over the cover. Like it's marketed as mm-hmm. being about an African-American woman who goes back. And I feel somewhat cheated from her original intent by that.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of mad at publishers, more so than normal.
Because the cover art. I don't like the cover art in the first place, but yeah, it ruins that obviously intentional effort by the author.
Right. So writing in 1979 and having people... I'm doing my own kind of small mm-hmm. time travel mm-hmm. back 40 years, and like, what kind of impact would this have had on readers just picking up this book?
Sure.
With a title that it's compelling yet like vague at the same time.
Right.
I think it's a perfect title.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, there's not a lot about this novel that isn't perfect, in my opinion.
It definitely makes me want to read the rest of her body of work. I haven't read anything else by her.
Yeah. It's a lot of good things, right? It's compelling. It's interesting. It's, you know, like we were saying, timeless. It's still effective today. I like that it's short. It's under 300 pages.
Yeah, that's
both the novel and the graphic novel. You can read on a Saturday and bring back to the library on Monday.
And it is fast-paced. It's not a 300-page book that drags.
Yeah, you know? It's on purpose, I think. Mm-hmm. The urgency and the danger that these characters are in sometimes is supported by the fast pace of the writing.
Before we wrap up, I also bring up how Dana was always teaching kids and different characters to write and to read, mm-hmm. Which of course is maybe illegal for slaves to do. But also Dana the character and Kevin were both writers. And my question for the group was, how else do you think this fits into the themes of the book? Having not just the freedom to read, but also like, you know.
Well, I think the theme of knowledge is key to the story. Mm-hmm. The knowledge that Dana has about the future and about the past that these mm-hmm. characters in the past, in 1815, they can't have. For one, they're living in their moment. They don't know what the future holds. But Dana does know what the future holds. Mm-hmm. And so, like, on the one hand, she wants to express her knowledge in a couple different ways. Like, can I educate these people about their world? And can I also educate these people about my world? And those are both very complicated questions, right? Mm-hmm. Can I teach Rufus that things are different in the future and maybe he should act differently now? Can I teach these slaves that things are different in the future and they can act differently now? And mm-hmm. Is that knowledge dangerous? Should that knowledge be shared? And maybe that's kind of the responsibility of a writer, whether it's Octavia E. Butler, the author, or whether it's our character Dana, or her husband Kevin is also a writer in the story, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's another set of those questions that the book provokes and doesn't need to answer. You've got to answer them for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And it also goes back to, you know, the Hamilton type of question of who tells our story. And if only the slave owners, if only the white plantation owners back then are telling the narrative, then we obviously get one very biased side.
Sure.
So the fact that they're both kind of recording their histories. And then the reason why Dana knows that Rufus is her ancestor is because in her own family Bible, the first name in the family Bible is Hagar, who is Rufus's daughter and her first known relative there. And she's the one who teaches Rufus's children how to read and write. So like the knowledge that she passes on to them then kind of gets put into this recording that mm-hmm. she then just uses to find that out. So another kind of circular mm-hmm. information, but
good sci-fi.
Yeah.
Good sci-fi again.
And there's also the circumstance of her writing down her thoughts and feelings mm-hmm. and then immediately burning them. So that really just emphasized the process mm-hmm. of it. And also other times when she would come back to 1976 and she would just sit in front of it. Of course, you have so much to write about. Not everybody gets to time travel and visit and then come back. And she can't write about any of it. She just stares at her typewriter. And then Kevin, who knows about the future, mm-hmm. spends a more of elongated time in the past, mm-hmm. and then has trouble
readjusting,
reacclimating to the present time. So I found that interesting as well, where, again, he not only cannot write, but he feels anger towards the writing process.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. There's just a great theme of the written word and what it can mean.
And on a broader level to Octavia Butler, when she was writing this, she did a ton of research on slave narratives, like first-person nonfiction slave narratives. But she said that when she was writing this book, she deliberately toned down the actual violence that was there during that time because she said if she was true to what was experienced, people wouldn't want to read it. It would be too much for the average audience to read. So I feel like a lot of people would read this book that wouldn't necessarily read those narratives. So she's bringing that story alive in a different way to people and kind of passing that on.
And she's doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
She has knowledge of how much violence there mm-hmm. was, and she could write about how much violence there was. But if that turns people off of the book, mm-hmm. she's got a responsibility now. How much of the story does she tell
mm-hmm.
in this book? It's a really good book. Oh, my God, you guys.
And I read this at the same time I was reading Black Klansman for the memoir of mm-hmm. Black Klansman for another library program here. And it was completely overwhelming, mm-hmm. the similarity of the themes of those two books. And of course, this one was written 4,000 times better, but Black Klansman is more of just like information pushed mm-hmm. at you, whereas this is more of an art form. Mm-hmm. But the themes are incredibly similar and disturbing, because the theme of Black Klansman is advanced, you know, 150 years. Mm-hmm. And
the themes are still the same.
Yes. Has anyone... Was there any discussion ever of making this into a movie?
I have no idea.
Or a miniseries? Like or, that, yeah. And B, I'm somewhat surprised
yeah.
in mm-hmm. that regard.
Yeah.
Maybe it will. Maybe now that the graphic novel, you mm-hmm. know, it came out, it's a number one New York Times bestseller, mm-hmm. it's an Eisner Award winner, maybe that'll turn some heads and, you know, this property will catch some more eyes.
Maybe.
It seems like it would be a perfect fit for, you know, that short miniseries type.
Yeah,
you know?
An 8-episode yeah. Netflix or whatever, mm-hmm. yeah, would be... perfect for this. You wouldn't want to do 3 seasons of Kindred.
No. And maybe someone listening to this podcast might think,
someone out there.
Hey, that'd be a great idea.
And the graphic novel is available on Hoopla.
It is yeah. on Hoopla. Yeah. That mm-hmm. I read the first half of it that way. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Hoopla user, every time we do a graphic novel on this podcast, I push Hoopla because it's really good, you mm-hmm. guys. Like, there's a lot of great stuff on Hoopla if you're a library mm-hmm. patron.
I was going to see a movie of Dark Phoenix last week, mm-hmm. and I went to Hoopla to read. I started the Dark Phoenix,
yeah.
and I ended up liking the graphic novel better than the movie.
I believe it.
But yes, Hoopla is very great.
Hoopla is very great, especially for graphic novels, and that's coming from someone like me who takes it very seriously. So yeah, you can find Kindred there, or you can find Kindred. I've got brand new, gorgeous copies of the graphic novel here at the Des Plaines Library that you can check out from the graphic novels collection. We've got the novel in the sci-fi section. So that's Kindred. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Joel, for joining me today. The book is great. The graphic novel is great. It's short. It's easy to read. We got several copies. I very much recommend you check it out. And then maybe, like Jamie, you'll read some more Octavia E. Butler afterwards. And that's it for Minor Recs. We'll see you next time.